Chapter 4, The Hidden Pond. Rain pattered endlessly against the roof. Kendra had never heard such a noisy downpour. Then again, she had never been in an attic during a rainstorm. There was something relaxing about the steady drumming, so constant that it almost became inaudible without ever decreasing in volume. Standing at the window beside the telescope, she watched the deluge. The rain fell straight and hard. There was no wind, just layer upon layer of streaking droplets, blurring into a gray haze in the distance. The gutter below her was about to overflow. Seth sat on a stool in the corner, painting. Lena had been creating paint-by-number canvases for him, sketching them with expert speed, customizing each image to his specifications. The current project was a dragon battling a knight on horseback amid a fuming wasteland. Lena had outlined the images in considerable detail, including subtleties of light and shade, so that the finished products looked quite accomplished. She had taught Seth how to mix paint and given him samples of which hue corresponded to each number. For the current painting, she had incorporated more than 90 different shades. Kendra had rarely seen Seth demonstrate as much diligence as he did on the paintings. After a few brief lessons on how to apply the paint, including the purposes of different brushes and tools, he had already finished a large canvas of pirates sacking a town and a smaller one of a snake charmer diving away from a striking cobra. Two impressive paintings in 3 days. He was an addict, and he was almost done with his latest project. Crossing to the bookshelf, Kendra ran a hand along the spines of the volumes. She had searched the room thoroughly and had yet to find the last keyhole, let alone a secret passage to the other side of the attic. Seth could be a pest, but now that he had become immersed in his painting, she was starting to miss him. Maybe Lena would outline a painting for her. Kendra had turned down her initial offer since it sounded childish, like coloring, but the finished products looked much less juvenile than Kendra had anticipated. Kendra opened the door and descended the stairs. The house was dim and quiet, the rainfall more distant as she left the attic behind. She walked along the hall and down the stairs to the main floor. The house seemed too quiet. All the lights were out despite the gloom.
Lena?
There was no answer. Kendra went through the living room, the dining room, and into the kitchen. No sign of the housekeeper. Had she left? Opening the door to the basement, Kendra peered down the steps into the darkness. The stairs were made of stone, as if leading to a dungeon.
Lena?
She called uncertainly. Surely the woman wasn't down there without any light. Kendra went back down the hall and slid open the door to the study. Having not yet entered this particular room, she first noticed the huge desk cluttered with books and papers. The massive head of a hairy boar with jutting tusks hung mounted on the wall. A collection of grotesque wooden masks rested on a shelf. Golfing trophies lined another. Plaques decorated the wood-paneled walls, along with a framed display of military medals and ribbons. There was a black-and-white picture of a much younger Grandpa Sorensen showing off an enormous marlin. On the desk, inside a crystal sphere with a flat bottom, was an eerie replica of a human skull no bigger than her thumb. Kendra slid the study door closed. She tried the garage, the parlor, and the family room. Maybe Lena had run to the store. Kendra walked out to the back porch, shielded from the rain by the overhang. She loved the fresh, damp scent of rainfall. It continued to come down hard, puddling around the garden. Where did the butterflies hide from such a downpour? Then she saw Lena. The housekeeper knelt in the mud beside a bush blossoming with large blue and white roses, absolutely soaked, apparently weeding. Her white hair was plastered to her head, and her housecoat was drenched.
Lena?
The housekeeper looked up, smiled, and waved. Kendra retrieved an umbrella from the hall closet and joined Lena in the garden.
"You're sopping," Kendra said.
Lena rooted out a weed.
"It's a warm rain. I like being out in the weather."
She stuffed the weed into a bulging garbage bag.
"You're going to catch a cold." "I don't often take ill."
She paused to stare up at the clouds.
"It won't last much longer."
Kendra tilted her umbrella back and gazed heavenward. Leaden skies in all directions.
"You think?" "Wait and see. The rain will pass within the hour." "Your knees are all muddy." "You think I've lost my marbles?"
The diminutive woman stood up and spread her arms wide, tilting her head back.
"Do you ever look up at the rain, Kendra? It feels like the sky is falling."
Kendra tilted the umbrella back again. Millions of raindrops rushed toward her, some pelting her face and making her blink.
"Or like you're soaring up to the clouds," she said. "I suppose I should get you inside before my unusual habits rub off." "No, I didn't mean to disturb you."
Back under the protection of the umbrella, Kendra wiped droplets from her forehead.
I guess you don't want the umbrella?" "That would defeat the purpose. I'll be in shortly."
Kendra returned to the house. She stole glances at Lena through a window. It was just so peculiar. She couldn't resist spying. Sometimes Lena was working. Sometimes she was smelling a blossom or stroking its petals. And the rain kept falling. Kendra was sitting on her bed, reading poems by Shel Silverstein, when the room suddenly brightened. The sun was out. Lena had been right about the rain. It had relented about 40 minutes after her prediction. The housekeeper had come inside, changed out of her wet clothes, and made sandwiches. Across the room, the painting of the knight charging the dragon was complete. Seth had gone outside an hour ago. Kendra was in a lazy mood. Just as Kendra returned her attention to the latest poem, Seth burst into the room, breathing hard. He wore only socks on his feet. His clothes were streaked with mud.
"You have to come see what I found in the woods."
"Another witch?"
"No, no, way cooler."
"A hobo camp?"
"I'm not going to say. You have to come see."
"Does it involve hermits or lunatics?"
"No people," he said.
"How far from the yard?"
"Not far.
We could get in trouble. Besides, it's muddy out."
"Grandpa is hiding a beautiful park in the woods,"
Seth blurted.
"What?"
asked Kendra.
"You have to come see it. Put on galoshes or something."
Kendra closed the book. The sunlight came and went, depending on the shifting clouds. A soft breeze ruffled the foliage. The woods smelled mulchy. Scrambling over a damp, rotting log, Kendra shrieked when she saw a glistening white frog. Seth turned around.
"Awesome!
Try disgusting."
"I've never seen a white frog,"
said Seth. He tried to grab it, but the frog took an enormous leap as he approached.
"Whoa, that thing flew!"
He checked the underbrush where the frog had landed, but found nothing.
"Hurry up,"
Kendra said, glancing back the way they had come. The house was no longer in sight. She could not shake the sick, nervous feeling in her stomach. Unlike her little brother, Kendra was not a natural rule breaker. She was in all the accelerated classes at school, got almost perfect grades, kept her room tidy, and always practiced for her piano lessons. Seth, on the other hand, settled for lousy grades, routinely skipped his homework, and earned frequent detentions. Of course, he was also the one with all the friends, so maybe there was a method to his madness.
"What's the rush?"
He took the lead again, blazing a trail through the undergrowth.
"The longer we're gone, the more likely somebody will notice we're missing."
"It isn't much farther. See that hedge?"
It was not exactly a hedge, more like a tall barrier of unkempt bushes.
"You call that a hedge?"
"The park is on the far side."
The wall of bushes extended as far as Kendra could see in either direction.
"How do we get around it?"
through it. You'll see.
They reached the bushes and Seth turned left, studying the leafy barricade as he went, occasionally squatting and checking closer. The interlocked bushes ranged from 10 to 12 feet tall, and they looked really thick.
Okay, I think this is where I squirmed through.
There was a deep indentation at the base of where two bushes overlapped. Seth dropped to all fours and forced his way in.
You're going to have a billion ticks, Kendra predicted. They're all hiding from the rain, he replied with perfect confidence.
Kendra got down and followed him.
I don't think this is the same way I got through last time, Seth admitted. It's a little more cramped, but it should work.
He was now slithering on his belly.
Oh, this better be good.
Kendra squirmed on her elbows, eyes squinted. The damp ground felt cold, and droplets fell from the bush as she jostled it. Seth reached the far side and stood up. She crawled through as well, her eyes widening as she got to her feet. Before her lay a pristine pond, a couple of hundred yards across, with a small, verdant island at the center. A series of elaborate gazebos surrounded the pond, interconnected by a whitewashed boardwalk. Flowering vines wound along the latticework of the impressive promenade. Elegant swans glided on the water. Butterflies and hummingbirds wove and darted among the blossoms. On the far side of the pond, peacocks strutted and preened.
What in the world?
Kendra gasped.
Come on!
Seth started across the lush, neatly mown lawn toward the nearest gazebo. Kendra looked back, understanding why Seth had called the disheveled barrier of bushes a hedge. On this side, the bushes were neatly trimmed. The hedgerow encompassed the entire area with a single arched entryway off to one side.
Why didn't we come through the entryway?
Kendra asked, trotting after her brother.
Shortcut.
Seth paused at the white steps leading up to the gazebo to pluck a piece of fruit from a trellis.
Try one. You should wash it,
Kendra said.
It just rained.
He took a bite.
It's so good.
Kendra tried one. It was the sweetest nectarine she had ever tasted.
Delicious.
Together they mounted the steps of the extravagant pavilion. The wood railing was perfectly smooth. Although unshielded from the elements, all the woodwork appeared to be in flawless condition. No peeling paint, no cracks, no splinters. The gazebo was furnished with white wicker love seats and chairs. In some places, the ubiquitous vines had been woven into living wreaths and other fanciful patterns. A bright parrot sat on a high perch staring down at them.
Look at the parrot, Kendra exclaimed. Last time I saw monkeys, Seth said. Little guys with long arms. They were swinging all over the place. And there was a goat. It ran away as soon as it saw me.
Seth took off, clomping down one of the boardwalks. Kendra followed more slowly, absorbing the scene. It looked like the setting of a fairy tale wedding. She counted 12 pavilions, each unique. One had a small white dock projecting into the pond. The little pier was connected to a floating shed that had to be a boathouse. Kendra strolled after Seth, whose ruckus was sending the swans drifting toward the far side of the lake, leaving V-shaped ripples in their wake. The sun broke through the clouds and gleamed upon the water. Why would Grandpa Sorensen keep a place like this a secret? It was magnificent. Why go through all the trouble of maintaining it, if not to enjoy it? Hundreds of people could gather here with room to spare. Kendra went to the gazebo with the pier and found that the boathouse was locked. It was not large. She guessed it held a few canoes or rowboats. Maybe Grandpa Sorensen would give them permission to paddle around the pond. No, she could not even tell him she knew about this place. Was that why he had told them about the ticks and made rules against venturing into the woods? To keep this little Eden hidden? Could he be so selfish and secretive? Kendra finished a complete lap around the pond, walking on clean wooden planks the entire way. Across the pond, Seth yelled, and a small flock of cockatoos took flight. The sun retreated behind clouds. They needed to get back. Kendra told herself she could return later. Kendra was concerned when she cut into her steak. The middle was pink, almost red at the center. Grandpa Sorensen and Dale were already taking bites.
"Is my steak cooked?" Kendra ventured.
"Course it's cooked," Dale said around a mouthful.
"Pretty red in the middle."
"Only way to eat a steak,"
Grandpa said, dabbing his mouth with a linen napkin.
"Medium rare. Keeps it juicy and tender. If you cook it all the way through, you might as well eat shoe leather."
Kendra glanced at Lena.
"Go ahead, dear," the woman urged. "You won't get sick. I cooked it plenty."
"I like it,"
Seth said, chewing on a bite.
"We have any ketchup?"
"Why would you go and ruin a perfectly good steak with ketchup?" Dale moaned.
"You put it on your eggs," Lena reminded him, placing a bottle in front of Seth.
"That's different. Ketchup and onions on eggs is a necessity."
"That's sickening,"
Seth said, upending the bottle over his steak. Kendra took a bite of the garlic potatoes. They were tasty. Mustering her courage, she sampled the steak. Bursting with flavorful seasoning, it was much easier to chew than other steaks she had eaten.
"The steak is wonderful," she said. "Thank you, dear," said Lena.
They ate in silence for a few moments. Grandpa dabbed his mouth with his napkin again and cleared his throat.
"What do you suppose makes people so eager to break rules?"
Kendra felt a jolt of guilt. The question was addressed generally and hung there awaiting a response. When nobody answered, Grandpa continued.
"Is it simply the pleasure of disobedience, the thrill of rebellion?"
Kendra glanced at Seth. He stared at his plate, picking at his potatoes.
"Were the rules unfair, Kendra? Was I being unreasonable?"
"No."
"Did I leave you with nothing to do, Seth? No pool, no treehouse, no toys or hobbies?" We had things to do." "Then why did you two go into the woods? I warned you there would be consequences." "Why are you hiding weird old ladies out in the forest?"
Seth blurted.
"Weird old ladies?"
Grandpa asked.
"Yeah, what about that?"
Grandpa nodded thoughtfully.
"She has a rotten old rope. You didn't blow on it." "I didn't go near her. She was freaky." "She came to me and asked if she could build a shack on my property. She promised to keep to herself. I saw no harm in it. You shouldn't go bothering her."
"Seth found your private retreat," Kendra said. "He wanted me to see it. My curiosity got the better of me."
"Private retreat?"
"Big pond, fancy boardwalk, parrots and swans and peacocks." Grandpa looked at Dale, speechless. Dale shrugged.
"I was hoping you'd take us out on a boat," Kendra said.
"Who said anything about a boat?"
Kendra rolled her eyes.
"I saw the boathouse, Grandpa."
He tossed his hands up and shook his head. Kendra set her fork down.
"Why would you let such a nice place go to waste?"
"That is my business,"
Grandpa said.
"Yours was to obey my rules for your own protection." "We're not afraid of ticks,"
Seth said. Grandpa folded his hands and lowered his eyes.
"I was not entirely honest about why you needed to stay out of the woods."
He lifted his gaze.
"On my land, I provide refuge for some dangerous animals, many of them endangered. This includes poisonous snakes, toads, spiders, and scorpions, along with bigger game. Wolves, apes, panthers. I use chemicals and other controls to keep them away from the yard. But the woods are extremely hazardous, particularly the island in the center of the lake. It is deliberately infested with inland taipans, also called fierce snakes, the deadliest serpent known to man."
"Why didn't you warn us?" Kendra asked.
"My preserve is a secret. I have all the necessary licenses, but if my neighbors complained, those could be revoked. You must not tell a soul. Not even your parents." We saw a white frog,
Seth said breathlessly.
Was that poisonous?
Grandpa nodded.
Quite lethal. In Central America, the indigenous people used them to fashion poison darts.
Seth tried to catch it.
Had he succeeded,
Grandpa said gravely,
he would be dead.
Seth swallowed.
I'll never go into the woods again. I trust you won't,
Grandpa said.
All the same, a rule is of no value unless the punishment is enforced. You will have to stay in your room for the rest of your stay.
What?
Seth said.
But you lied to us. Being afraid of ticks is a lame reason to stay out of the woods. I just thought you were treating us like babies. You should have brought those concerns to me,
Grandpa said.
Was I unclear about the rules or the consequences? You were unclear about the reasons,
Seth said.
That is my right. I am your grandfather, and this is my property.
Yeah, but I am your grandson. You should tell me the truth. You're not setting a very good example.
Kendra tried not to laugh. Seth was in lawyer mode. He always tried to maneuver out of trouble with their parents. Sometimes he made some pretty good points.
What do you think, Kendra?
Grandpa asked. She had not expected him to solicit her opinion. She tried to collect her thoughts.
Well, I agree that you didn't tell us the whole truth. No way would I have gone into the woods if I knew there would be dangerous animals.
Me neither,
Seth said.
I made two simple rules. You understood them, and you broke them. Just because I chose not to share all my reasons for making the rules, you think you should escape punishment?
Yes,
Seth said.
Just this once.
That doesn't sound fair to me,
Grandpa said.
Unless the punishments are enforced, rules lose all their power.
But we won't do it again,
Seth said.
We promise. Don't lock us up in the house for 2 weeks.
Don't blame me,
Grandpa said.
You locked yourself up by disregarding the rules. Kendra, what do you think would be fair?
Well, maybe you could give us a reduced punishment as a warning, then the full punishment if we mess up again.
Reduced punishment,
Grandpa mused.
So you still pay a price for your disobedience, but you get one more chance. I might be able to live with that. Seth? Better than the whole punishment. That settles it. I will reduce your sentence to a single day. You will spend tomorrow confined to the attic. You can come down for meals and you can use the bathroom, but that is all. Break any of my rules again, and you will not leave the attic until your parents come for you. For your own safety. Understood?
Yes, sir,
Kendra said. Seth nodded his agreement. Chapter 5 Journal of Secrets.
Did you ever notice the keyhole in the belly of the unicorn?
Seth asked. He was lying on the floor beside the fanciful rocking horse, hands laced behind his head. Kendra looked up from her painting. She had asked Lena to create a paint by numbers to help her endure her incarceration. Kendra had wanted to paint the pavilions around the pond, and Lena had quickly sketched a scene with startling accuracy, as if the housekeeper had the place memorized. Seth declined to have another canvas prepped. Stuck in the attic or not, he was sick of painting. Keyhole?
Weren't you looking for keyholes?
Kendra got off her stool and crouched beside her brother. Sure enough, there was a tiny keyhole on the underside of the unicorn. She retrieved her keys from the nightstand drawer. The third key Grandpa Sorensen had given her did the trick. A small hatch swung open. Out fell several rose-shaped chocolates wrapped in gold foil, identical to the ones she had found in the miniature armoire.
What are those?
Seth asked.
Soap, Kendra said.
Kendra reached up into the hatch and felt around inside the hollow rocking horse.
She found a few more rosebud chocolates and a tiny golden key like the one from the armoire. The second key to the locked journal.
They look like candy, Seth said, snatching one of the 10 chocolates.
Have one. They're perfumed. You'll smell pretty.
He unwrapped it.
Funny color for soap. Smells a lot like chocolate.
He popped the whole thing in his mouth. His eyebrows shot up.
Holy cow, this is good!
Since you found the keyhole, how about we split them 50-50? She was a little worried he would eat all of them otherwise.
Sounds fair, he said, grabbing four more.
Kendra placed her 5 chocolates in the nightstand drawer and retrieved the locked book. As she expected, the second golden key unlocked another clasp. Where could the third one be? She slapped her forehead. The first two had been hidden inside things the other keys had opened. The other one must be in the jewelry box. Opening the jewelry box, she rummaged through the compartments of glittering pendants, brooches, and rings. Sure enough, disguised on a charm bracelet, she found a tiny golden key matching the other two. Kendra eagerly crossed the room and inserted the key into the final lock on the Journal of Secrets. The final clasp unlatched and she opened the book. The first page was blank, so was the second. She thumbed quickly through the pages. The whole book was blank, just an empty journal. Was Grandpa Sorensen trying to encourage her to keep a diary? But the whole game with the keys had been so sneaky. Maybe there was a trick to this as well. A hidden message, disappearing ink or something. What was the trick with disappearing ink? Spray it with lemon juice and hold it up to a light? Something like that. And there was another trick where you rub gently with a pencil and a message appeared. Or maybe something even more devious. Kendra surveyed the journal more carefully, hunting for clues. She held a few pages up against the window to see if the light would betray hidden watermarks or other mysterious evidence.
What are you doing? Seth asked.
He had only one chocolate rosebud left. She would need to hide her chocolate someplace more secure than the nightstand drawer. She held up a final page. The light revealed nothing. Practicing for my audition at the insane asylum?
I bet you'll win first prize, he teased.
Unless they see your face, she retorted.
Seth went over and scooped some kernels for Goldilocks.
Cool, she laid another egg!
He opened the cage to retrieve it and stroked her soft feathers. Kendra plopped down on the bed, leafing through the last pages. Suddenly, she stopped. There was writing on one of the final pages. Not really hidden, just tucked away in an unlikely spot. 3 words written near the binding toward the bottom of an otherwise empty page. Drink the milk. Folding the corner, she flipped through the remaining pages. Then she skimmed the rest of the pages from the start to make sure she had missed no similar messages. There were no other cryptic clues. Drink the milk. Maybe soaking a page in milk would make words appear. She could soak one in the tins of milk Dale left out. Or that could be the milk the message was talking about. A challenge to drink unprocessed cow's milk? What purpose could that serve? To give her diarrhea? Dale had made a special point of warning her not to drink the milk. Of course, he had acted sort of peculiar about it. He could be hiding something. Drink the milk. All the hassle of finding holes for the keys Grandpa Sorensen gave her in order to uncover extra keys that fit a locked journal for that odd message? Was she missing something or overanalyzing? The hunt might have simply been meant to occupy her time.
Do you think Mom and Dad would let us get a pet chicken?
Seth asked, holding the hen.
Probably right after they get us a pet buffalo.
Why don't you ever hold Goldilocks? She's really good.
Holding a live chicken sounds disgusting.
Better than holding a dead one.
I'm fine just petting her.
You're missing out.
Seth held the hen up to his face.
You're a good chicken, aren't you, Goldilocks?
The hen clucked softly.
She's going to peck your eyes out, Kendra warned.
No way, she's tame.
Popping one of the rosebud chocolates in her mouth, Kendra replaced the Journal of Secrets in the nightstand drawer and returned to her painting. She scowled. Between the gazebos, pond, and swans, the picture required more than 30 shades of white, gray, and silver. Using the sample hues Lena had given her, she prepared her next color. The sun was bright the next day. There was no evidence that it had ever rained or that it would ever rain again. Hummingbirds, butterflies, and bumblebees had returned to the yard. Lena gardened in the back beneath a large sun hat. Kendra sat in the shade on the back porch. No longer a prisoner in the attic, she felt better able to enjoy the fine weather. She wondered if the diverse butterflies she saw in the yard were among the species Grandpa Sorensen had imported. How did you keep a butterfly from leaving your property? The milk, perhaps? She passed the time with a game she had found on a shelf in the attic, a triangular board with 15 holes and 14 pegs. The object was to jump pegs like checkers until you had only one left, which sounded simple at first. The problem was that in the process of jumping, certain pegs ended up stranded, unable to jump or be jumped. The number of pegs you left stranded on the board determined your score. Her best effort so far was 3, which the directions labeled typical. Leaving 2 was good. 1 was genius. 5 or more labeled you hopeless. While resetting the pegs for a fresh attempt, Kendra saw what she had been waiting for. Dale was walking along the perimeter of the yard with a pie tin. Setting the peg game on a table, she hurried to intercept him. Dale looked mildly distressed at her approach.
"I can't let Lena see you talking to me like this," he murmured in low tones. I'm supposed to put the milk out on the sly."
"I thought nobody knew you put the milk out."
Right. See, your grandfather doesn't know, but Lena does. We try to keep it our secret."
"I was wondering what the milk tastes like."
He looked nervous. "Didn't you hear me last time? You could get shingles, scabies, scurvy."
"Scurvy?"
"This milk is a bacterial stew. That's why the insects like it so well."
I have friends who have tried milk fresh from the cow. They survived."
"I'm sure those were healthy cows," Dale said. "These cows are... Never you mind. Idea is, this ain't just any milk. It's highly contaminated. I wash my hands good after even handling the stuff."
"So you don't think I should taste it?"
"Not unless you're aiming for a premature burial."
"Would you at least take me in the barn to see the cows?"
"See the cows? That would be breaking your grandfather's rules."
"I thought the point was we might get hurt," Kendra said. "I'll be fine if you're with me."
"Your grandfather's rules are your grandfather's rules. He has his reasons. I'm not about to go breaking them or bending them either."
"No. Maybe if you let me see the cows, I'll keep your secret about putting out the milk."
"Now see, that's blackmail. I'll not stand for blackmail."
"I wonder what Grandpa will say when I tell him at dinner tonight."
"He'll likely say, you ought to mind your own affairs. Now, with your leave, I have chores to do."
She watched him walk away with a tin of milk. He surely had acted defensive and strange. There was definitely some mystery surrounding the milk. But all the talk about bacteria made her reluctant to try it. She needed a guinea pig. Seth tried a flip off the boulder into the pool, but landed on his back. He never could quite make it all the way around. He surfaced and stroked to the side to try again.
"Nice backflop," Kendra said, standing beside the pool. "That was one for the blooper reel."
Seth climbed out of the water.
"I'd like to see you do a better one. Where have you been?"
"I found a secret."
"What?"
I can't explain. but I can show you.
Good as the lake?
Not quite. Hurry up!
Putting a towel over his shoulders, Seth stepped into his sandals. Kendra led him away from the pool through the garden to some flowering shrubs on the outskirts of the yard. Behind the plants lay a large pie tin full of milk where a crowd of hummingbirds were feeding.
They drink milk?
He asked.
Yeah, but that isn't the point. Taste it.
Why?
You'll see.
Have you tried it?
Yes.
What's the big deal?
I told you. Try it, and you'll see.
Kendra watched curiously as he kneeled by the tin. The hummingbirds dispersed. Seth dipped a finger into the milk and put it on his tongue.
Pretty good. Sweet.
Sweet?
He lowered his head and puckered his lips against the surface of the milk. Pulling back, he wiped his mouth.
Yeah, sweet and creamy. A little warm, though.
Looking beyond Kendra, his eyes bulged. Seth jumped to his feet, screaming and pointing.
What the heck are those?
Kendra turned. All she saw was a butterfly and a couple of hummingbirds. She looked back at Seth. He was turning in circles, eyes darting around the garden, apparently perplexed and amazed.
Whoa, they're everywhere,
he said in awe.
What are?
Look around, the fairies!
Kendra stared at her brother. Could the milk have totally fried his brain, or was he messing around with her? He didn't appear to be faking. He was over by a rose bush gazing at a butterfly in wonder. Tentatively, he reached a hand toward it, but it fluttered out of reach. He turned back to Kendra.
Was it the milk? This is way cooler than the lake!
His excitement seemed genuine. Kendra eyed the tin of milk. Drink the milk. If Seth was playing a prank, his acting skills had suddenly improved tenfold. She dipped a finger and put it in her mouth. Seth was right. It was sweet and warm. For an instant, the sun gleamed in her eyes, making her blink. She glanced back at her brother, who was creeping up on a small group of hovering fairies. Three had wings like butterflies, one like a dragonfly. She could not suppress a shriek at the impossible sight. Kendra looked back at the milk. A fairy with hummingbird wings was drinking from her cupped hand. Other than the wings, the fairy looked like a slender woman not quite 2 inches tall. She wore a glittering turquoise slip and had long, dark hair. When Kendra leaned closer, the fairy zipped away. There was no way she was really seeing this, right? There had to be an explanation, but the fairies were everywhere, near and far, shimmering in vivid colors. How could she deny what was before her eyes? As Kendra continued to survey the garden, startled disbelief melted into wonder. Fairies of all conceivable varieties flitted about, exploring blossoms, gliding on the breeze, and acrobatically avoiding her brother. Roaming the pathways of the garden in a daze, Kendra saw that the fairy women appeared to represent all nationalities. Some looked Asian, some Indian, some African, some European. Several were less comparable to mortal women, with blue skin or emerald green hair. A few had antennae. Their wings came in all varieties, mostly patterned after butterflies, but much more elegantly shaped and radiantly colored. All the fairies gleamed brilliantly, outshining the flowers of the garden like the sun outshines the moon. Rounding a corner on a pathway, Kendra stopped short. There stood Grandpa Sorensen, wearing a flannel shirt and work boots, arms folded across his chest.
"We need to talk," he said.
The grandfather clock tolled the hour, chiming 3 times after the introductory melody. Sitting in a high-backed leather armchair in Grandpa Sorensen's study, Kendra wondered if grandfather clocks got their name because only grandparents owned them. She looked over at Seth, seated in an identical chair. It looked too big for him. These were chairs for adults.
Why had Grandpa Sorensen left the room? Were they in trouble? After all, he had given her the keys that ended up leading her and the guinea pig to sample the milk. Even so, she could not quit worrying that she had discovered something that was meant to stay hidden. Not only were fairies real, but Grandpa Sorensen had hundreds in his yard.
"Is that a fairy skull?"
Seth asked, pointing to the flat-bottomed globe with the thumb-sized skull on Grandpa's desk.
"Probably," Kendra said.
"Are we busted?"
"We better not be. There were no rules against drinking milk."
The study door slid open. Grandpa entered along with Lena, who carried three mugs on a tray. Lena offered Kendra a mug, then Seth and Grandpa. The mug contained hot chocolate. Lena left the room as Grandpa took a seat behind his desk.
"I am impressed how quickly you solved my puzzle," he said, taking a sip from his mug.
"You wanted us to drink the milk?" Kendra said.
"Assuming you were the right kind of people. Frankly, I don't know you that well. I hoped that the kind of person who would take the trouble to solve my little puzzle would be the kind of person who could handle the notion of a preserve full of magical creatures. Fablehaven would be too much to swallow for most people."
"Fablehaven?" Seth repeated.
"The name the founders gave this preserve centuries ago. A refuge for mystical creatures. A stewardship passed down from caretaker to caretaker over the years."
Kendra tried the hot chocolate. It was superb. The flavor made her think of the rosebud chocolates.
"What do you have besides fairies?"
Seth asked.
"Oh, many beings, great and small, which is the true reason the woods are off limits. There are creatures out there much more perilous than venomous snakes or wild apes. Only certain orders of magical life forms are generally permitted in the yard. Fairies, pixies, and such."
Grandpa took another sip from his mug.
"You like the hot chocolate?"
"It's wonderful," Kendra said.
"Made from the same milk you sample in the garden today. Same milk the fairies drink. Just about the only food they'll eat. When mortals drink it, their eyes are open to an unseen world. But the effects wear off after a day. Lena will prepare you a cup every morning so you can stop stealing from the fairies."
"Where does it come from?" Kendra asked.
"We make it special in the barn. We have some dangerous creatures in there too, so it's still off-limits." "Why is everything off-limits?"
Seth complained.
"I've been a long way into those woods 4 times, and I've always been fine."
4 times? Grandpa said.
"All before the warning,"
Seth amended hastily.
"Yes, well, your eyes were not yet open to what truly surrounded you. And you were fortunate. Even when you were blind to the enchanted creatures populating the forest, there are many places you could have ventured into from which you would not have returned. Of course, now that you can see them, the creatures here can interact with you much more readily, so the danger is much greater."
"No offense, Grandpa, but is this really the truth?"
Kendra asked.
"You've told us so many versions of why the woods are forbidden."
"You saw the fairies," he said.
Kendra leaned forward.
"Maybe the milk made us hallucinate. Maybe they were holograms. Maybe you just keep telling us whatever you think we'll believe."
"I understand your concern,"
Grandpa said.
"I wanted to protect you from the truth about Fablehaven unless you sought it out for yourselves. It is not the kind of information I wanted to thrust upon you. That is the truth. What I'm telling you now is the truth. You'll have ample opportunity to confirm my words."
"So the animals we saw at the pond were actually other creatures? Like how the butterflies were fairies?"
Kendra clarified.
"Most assuredly. The pond can be a hazardous place. Return there now, and you would find friendly naiads beckoning you near the water in order to pull you under and drown you."
"That's so cruel," Kendra said.
"Depends on your perspective,"
Grandpa said, spreading his hands.
"To them, your life is so ridiculously short that to kill you is seen as absurd and funny. no more tragic than squashing a moth. Besides, they have a right to punish trespassers. The island at the center of the pond is a shrine to the Fairy Queen. No mortal is permitted to tread there. I know of a groundskeeper who broke that rule. The moment he set foot on the sacred island, he transformed into a cloud of dandelion fluff. Clothes and all, he scattered on the breeze and was never seen again.
Why would he go there? Kendra asked.
The Fairy Queen is widely considered the most powerful figure in all fairydom. The groundskeeper had a desperate need and went to plead for her assistance. Apparently, she was not impressed.
In other words, he had no respect for what was off-limits, Kendra said, giving Seth a meaningful look.
Precisely, Grandpa agreed.
The Queen of the Fairies lives on that little island?
Seth asked.
No, it is merely a shrine meant to honor her. Similar shrines abound on my property, and all can be dangerous.
If the pond is dangerous, why does it have a boathouse? Kendra asked.
A previous caretaker of this preserve had a fascination with naiads. The dandelion guy?
Seth asked.
A different guy,
Grandpa said.
It's a long story. Ask Lena about it sometime. I believe she knows the tale.
Kendra shifted in the oversized chair. Why do you live in such a scary place?
Grandpa folded his arms on the desk.
It's only frightening if you go where you don't belong. This entire sanctuary is consecrated ground, governed by laws that cannot be broken by the creatures who dwell here. Only on this hallowed soil could mortals interact with these beings with any measure of safety. As long as mortals remain within their boundaries, they are protected by the founding covenants of this preserve.
Covenants?
Seth asked.
Agreements. Specifically, a treaty ratified by all the orders of whimsical life forms who dwell here that affords a measure of security for mortal caretakers. In a world where mortal man has become the dominant force, most creatures of enchantment have fled to refuges like this one.
What are the covenants? Kendra asked.
The specific details are complex, with many limitations and exceptions. Speaking broadly, they are based on the law of the harvest, the law of retribution. If you do not bother the creatures, they will not bother you. This is what affords you so much protection when you are unable to see them. You can't interact with them, so they generally behave likewise.
But now we can see them,
Seth said.
Which is why you must use caution. The fundamental premises of the law are mischief for mischief, magic for magic, violence for violence. They will not initiate trouble unless you break the rules. You have to open the door. If you harass them, you open the door for them to harass you. Hurt them, they can hurt you. Use magic on them, they will use magic on you.
Use magic?
Seth said eagerly.
Mortals were never meant to use magic,
Grandpa said.
We are non-magical beings, but I have learned a few practical principles that help me manage things. Nothing you would find very remarkable.
Can you turn Kendra into a toad?
No, but there are beings out there who could, and I would not be able to change her back, which is why I need to finish this thought. Breaking the rules can include trespassing where you are not allowed. There are geographic boundaries set where certain creatures are allowed and certain creatures, including mortals, are not permitted. The boundaries function as a way to contain the darker creatures without causing an uproar. If you go where you do not belong, you could open the door to vicious retribution from powerful enemies.
So only good creatures can enter the yard?
Kendra said. Grandpa became very serious.
None of these creatures are good. Not the way we think of good. None are safe. Much of morality is peculiar to mortality. The best creatures here are merely not evil.
The fairies aren't safe?
Seth asked.
They aren't out to harm anyone, or I wouldn't allow them in the yard. I suppose they are capable of good deeds, but they would not normally do them for what we would consider the right reasons. Take brownies, for instance. Brownies don't fix things to help people. They fix things because they enjoy fixing things.
Do the fairies talk? Kendra asked.
Not much to humans. They have a language all their own, although they rarely speak to each other, except to trade insults. Most never condescend to use human speech. They consider everything beneath them. Fairies are vain, selfish creatures. You may have noticed I drained all the fountains and the bird baths outside. When they are full, the fairies assemble to stare at their reflections all day. So is Kendra a fairy?
Seth asked. Grandpa bit his lip and stared at the floor, obviously trying to choke back a laugh.
We had a mirror outside once and they flocked around it, Kendra said, studiously ignoring both the comment and the reaction.
I wondered what the heck was going on.
Grandpa regained his composure.
Exactly the sort of display I was trying to avoid by draining the bird baths. Fairies are remarkably conceited. Outside of a sanctuary like this one, they won't even let a mortal glimpse them. Since they consider looking at themselves the ultimate delight, they deny the pleasure to others. Most of the nymphs have the same mentality.
Why don't they care here? Kendra asked.
Oh, they still care. But they can't hide when you drink their milk, so they have reluctantly grown accustomed to mortals seeing them. I have to laugh sometimes. The fairies pretend not to care what mortals think about them, but try giving one a compliment. She'll blush, then the others will crowd in for their turn. You would think they'd be embarrassed. I think they're pretty,
Seth said.
They're gorgeous, Grandpa agreed, and they can be useful. They handle most of my gardening, but good, safe, not so much.
Kendra swallowed the last of her hot chocolate. So, if we don't go into the woods or the barn, and don't bother the fairies, we'll be fine?
Yes, this house and the yard around it is the most protected location in Fablehaven. Only the gentlest creatures are allowed here. Of course, there are a few nights a year when all the creatures run amok, and one of those is coming up. But I'll tell you more about it when the time comes.
Seth scooted forward in his chair.
I want to hear about the evil creatures. What's out there? For the sake of your ability to sleep at night, I'm going to keep that to myself. I met that weird old lady. Was she really something else?
Grandpa gripped the edge of the desk.
That encounter is a frightening example of why the woods are forbidden. It could have been disastrous. You ventured toward a very hazardous area. Is she a witch?
Seth asked.
She is. Her name is Muriel Taggart. How come I could see her? Witches are mortal. Then why don't you get rid of her?
Seth suggested.
The shack is not her home. It is her prison. She personifies the reasons why exploring the woods is unwise. Her husband was a caretaker here more than 160 years ago. She was an intelligent, lovely woman, but she became a frequent visitor to some of the darker portions of the forest, where she consorted with unsavory beings. They tutored her. Before long, she became enamored with the power of witchcraft, and they acquired considerable influence over her. She became unstable. Her husband tried to help her, but she was already too demented. When she tried to aid some of the foul denizens of the woods in a treacherous act of rebellion, her husband called in assistance and had her imprisoned. She has been trapped in that shack ever since, held captive by the knots in the rope you saw. Let her story serve as another warning. You have no business in those woods.
I get it, Seth said. He looked solemn.
Enough jabbering about rules and monsters,
Grandpa said, standing up.
I have chores, and you have a new world to explore. The day is fading. Go make the most of it. But stay in the yard.
What do you do all day? Kendra inquired,
walking out of the study beside Grandpa.
Oh, I have many chores to keep this place in order. Fablehaven is home to many extraordinary wonders and delights, but it requires a great deal of maintenance. You might be able to accompany me some of the time, now that you know the true nature of the place. Mundane work, mostly. I expect you'd have more fun playing in the garden.
Kendra laid a hand on Grandpa's arm.
I want to see as much as I can.
Chapter 6, Maddox. Kendra snapped awake with her sheets tented over her head. She was supposed to be excited about something. It felt like Christmas morning, or a day she was going to take off school so her family could visit an amusement park. No, she was at Grandpa Sorensen's. The fairies! She pushed off the sheets. Seth lay in a contorted position, hair wildly disheveled, mouth open, legs tangled in his covers, still out cold. They had stayed up late discussing the events of the day, almost like friends rather than siblings. Kendra rolled out of bed and padded over to the window. The sun was peeking over the eastern horizon, streaming gilded highlights across the treetops. She grabbed some clothes, went down to the bathroom, took off her nightshirt, and got dressed for the day. Downstairs, the kitchen was empty. Kendra found Lena on the porch balancing atop a stool. Lena was hanging wind chimes. She had already hung several along the length of the porch. A butterfly flitted around one of the chimes, playing a sweet, simple melody.
"Good morning," Lena said. "You're up early." "I'm still so excited from yesterday."
Kendra looked out at the garden. The butterflies, bumblebees, and hummingbirds were already going about their business. Grandpa was right. Many clustered around the newly refilled bird baths and fountains, admiring their reflections.
"Just a bunch of bugs again," Lena said. "Can I have some hot chocolate?" "Let me hang these last chimes," she said,
moving the stool and climbing fearlessly on top of it. She was so old. If she fell, she would probably die.
"Be careful," Kendra said.
Lena waved a dismissive hand.
"The day I'm too old to climb on a stool will be the day I throw myself off the roof."
She hung the final chime.
"We had to take these down for you kids. Might have made you suspicious to see hummingbirds playing music."
Kendra followed Lena back into the house.
"Years ago, there used to be a church within earshot that would play melodies on the bells," Lena said. "It was so funny to watch the fairies imitate the music. They still play those old songs sometimes."
Lena opened the refrigerator, removing an old-fashioned milk bottle. Kendra sat at the table. Lena poured some milk into a pot on the stove and began adding ingredients. Kendra noticed that she was not just scooping in chocolate powder. She was stirring in contents from multiple containers.
"Grandpa said to ask you about the story of the guy who built the boathouse," Kendra said.
Lena paused in her stirring.
"Did he? I suppose I am more familiar with that story than most."
She resumed stirring.
"What did he tell you?" "He said the guy had an obsession with naiads. What's a naiad, anyhow?" "A water nymph. What else did he say?" Just that you know the story." "Ah, yes. The man was named Patton Burgess," said Lena. "He became caretaker of this property in 1878, inheriting the position from his maternal grandfather. He was a young man at the time, quite good-looking, wore a mustache. There are pictures upstairs. The pond was his favorite place on the property."
"Mine too," Kendra said.
"He would go and gaze at the naiads for hours. They would try to tease him down to the water's edge, as was their custom, in order to drown him." He would draw near, sometimes even pretending he meant to jump in, but always stayed tantalizingly out of reach.
Lena sampled the hot chocolate and stirred some more.
Unlike most of the visitors, who seemed to regard the naiads as interchangeable, he paid special attention to a particular nymph. Asking for her by name, he began to pay little heed to the other naiads. On the days when his favorite would not show herself, he left early.
Lena poured the milk from the pot into a pair of mugs.
He became fixated on her. When he built the boathouse, the nymphs wondered what he could be doing. He constructed a broad, sturdy rowboat so he could go out on the water and be closer to the object of his fascination.
Lena brought the mugs to the table and sat down.
The naiads tried to upset his craft every time he set forth, but it was too cleverly constructed. They succeeded only in pushing it around the pond.
Kendra took a sip. The hot chocolate was perfection, barely cool enough to sip comfortably.
Patton began trying to coax his favorite naiad to leave the water, to come walk with him on the land. She responded by urging him to join her in the pond, for to leave the water would mean to enter mortality. The tug of war went on for more than 3 years. He would serenade her on his violin and read her poetry and make her promises about the joys their life together would hold. He showed such sincerity and such perseverance that on occasion she would gaze into his kind eyes and falter.
Lena sipped the hot chocolate.
One day in March, Patton got careless. He leaned too close to the gunwale, and a naiad caught hold of his sleeve as he conversed with his favorite. A strong man, he resisted her, but the struggle pulled him to one side of the boat, upsetting his typical equilibrium. A pair of naiads heaved upward on the other side, and it capsized.
He died?
Kendra was horrified.
He would have died, yes. The naiads had their prize. In their domain, he was no match for them. Giddy with the long-awaited victory, they rushed him toward the bottom of the pond to add him to their collection of mortal victims. But it was more than his favorite could bear. She had grown fond of Patton, seduced by his diligent attention, and, unlike the others, she did not consider his death an amusement. She fought off her sisters and returned him to the shore. That was the day I left the pond.
Kendra spewed hot chocolate across the table.
You're the naiad?
I was. Once.
You became mortal?
Lena absently blotted up the hot chocolate Kendra had sprayed, using a small towel.
If I could go back, I would make the same decision every time. We had a joyful life. Patton managed Fablehaven for 51 years before passing it off to a nephew. He lived 12 years after that, died at 91. His mind was sharp to the end. Helps to have a young wife.
How are you still alive?
Oh, I became subject to the laws of mortality. But they have taken effect gradually. As I sat by his deathbed, I looked perhaps 20 years older than I had on the day when I carried him from the water. I felt guilty about looking so young as his frail body was shutting down. I wanted to be old like him. Of course, now that my age is finally catching up with me, I don't care for it much.
Kendra sipped more of her hot chocolate. She was so enthralled that she barely tasted it.
What did you do after he passed away?
I took advantage of my mortality. I have paid a steep price for it. So I traveled the world to see what it had to offer. Europe, the Middle East, India, Japan, South America, Africa, Australia, the Pacific Islands. I had many adventures. I set some swimming records in Britain and could have set even more, except I was holding back no sense raising a lot of questions. I worked as a painter, a chef, a geisha, a trapeze artist, a nurse. Many men pursued me, but I never loved again. Eventually, there was a sameness to the traveling, so I returned home, to the place my heart never left. Do you ever go back to the pond? Only in memory. It would be unwise. They despise me there, all the more intensely because of their secret envy. How they would laugh at my appearance. They have not aged a day, but I have experienced many things that they will never know. Some painful, some wonderful.
Kendra finished the last of her chocolate and wiped her lips.
What was it like being a naiad?
Lena gazed out the window.
Hard to say. I ask myself the same question. It wasn't just my body that became mortal. My mind transformed as well. I think I prefer this life, but it might be because I have changed fundamentally. Mortality is a totally different state of being. You become more aware of time. I was absolutely content as a naiad. I lived in an unchanging state for what must have been many millennia, never thinking of the future or the past, always looking for amusement, always finding it, almost no self-awareness. It feels like a blur now. No, like a blink. A single moment that lasted thousands of years.
You would have lived forever?
Kendra exclaimed.
We weren't quite immortal. We did not age, so I suppose some of our kind could endure forever if lakes and rivers last forever. Difficult to say. We did not really live, not like mortals. We dreamed.
Wow,
Kendra said.
At least that was the way of things until Patton,
Lena said, more to herself now.
I began looking forward to his visits and back on them in memory. I suppose that was the beginning of the end.
Kendra shook her head.
And I thought you were just the half-Chinese housekeeper.
She smiled.
Patton always liked my eyes.
She batted them.
He said he was of the Asian persuasion.
What's Dale's story? Is he a pirate king or something?
Oh, Dale is a regular man. A second cousin of your grandfather. A man he trusts.
Kendra looked into her empty mug. A ring of chocolate sediment circled the bottom.
I have a question,
she said.
And I want you to answer honestly.
If I can. Is my Grandma Sorensen dead? What makes you ask that?
I think Grandpa makes up phony excuses for her not being around. This is a dangerous place. He has lied about other things. I get the feeling he's trying to protect us from the truth.
I often wonder if lies are ever a protection.
She's dead, isn't she?
No, she's alive.
Is she the witch?
No, she's not the witch.
Is she really visiting Aunt Whoever in Missouri?
That is for your grandfather to tell.
Seth looked over his shoulder. Besides the fairies fluttering about, the garden looked still. Grandpa and Dale were long gone. Lena was in the house dusting. Kendra was off doing whatever boring things kept her occupied. He had his emergency kit in hand, along with a few strategic additions. Operation Sea Cool Monsters was about to begin. He hesitantly stepped off the edge of the lawn into the woods, half expecting werewolves to leap out at him. There were a few fairies up ahead, not as many as in the garden. Otherwise, things looked pretty much the same. He marched forward, setting a brisk pace.
Where do you think you're going?
Seth whirled. Kendra was approaching from the garden. He walked back to meet her at the edge of the lawn.
I want to see what's really at the pond. Those nigh thingies and stuff.
How brain damaged are you? Didn't you hear a word Grandpa told us yesterday?
I'm going to be careful. I won't go near the water.
You could get killed. I mean, really killed. Not bitten by a tick. Grandpa made those rules for a reason.
Adults always underestimate kids, Seth said. They get all protective because they think we're babies. Think about it. Mom used to complain all the time about me playing in the street. But I always did it. And what happened? Nothing. I paid attention. I stayed out of the way when a car came.
This is so different.
Grandpa goes all over the place.
Kendra clenched her hands into fists.
Grandpa knows the places to avoid. You don't even know what you're dealing with. Besides, when Grandpa finds out, you'll be stuck in the attic the rest of our stay.
How's he gonna find out?
He knew we went into the woods last time. He knew we drank the milk.
Because you were there. Your bad luck rubbed off on me. How did you know where I was going?
Your secret agent skills need some work, Kendra said. A good start might be not wearing your camouflage shirt every time you go exploring.
I need to hide from the dragons.
Right. You're practically invisible, just a floating head.
I have my emergency kit. If anything attacks, I can scare it away with my gear.
What, with rubber bands?
I have a whistle. I have a mirror. I have a cigarette lighter. I have firecrackers. They'll think I'm a wizard.
Do you really believe that?
And I have this.
He pulled out the little skull in the crystal globe from Grandpa's desk.
That should make them think twice.
A skull the size of a peanut?
There probably aren't even any monsters, Seth said.
What makes you think Grandpa's telling the truth this time? I don't know. Maybe the fairies?
Well, good job. You blew it. Congratulate yourself. I can't go now.
I'm going to blow it every time. Not to be a jerk, but because you could really get hurt.
Seth kicked a stone, sending it skidding into the woods.
What am I supposed to do now?
How about exploring the enormous garden full of fairies?
I already did. I can't catch them.
Not to catch them. To look at magical creatures that nobody else even knows exist. Come on.
He reluctantly joined her.
Oh, look. Another fairy, he mumbled. Now I've seen a million.
Don't forget to put the skull back.
When they responded to the call for dinner, a stranger sat at the table along with Grandpa and Dale. The stranger stood when they entered. He was taller than Grandpa and much broader, with curly brown hair. The layers of furry skins he wore made him look like a mountain man. He was missing the bottom of one earlobe.
Kids, this is Maddox Fisk,
Grandpa said.
Maddox, meet my grandchildren, Kendra and Seth.
Kendra shook the man's calloused, thick-fingered hand.
Do you work here too?
Seth asked.
Maddox is a fairy broker,
Grandpa said.
Among other things, Maddox added. Call fairies me specialty.
You sell fairies? Kendra asked, taking a seat.
Trap them, buy them, trade them, sell them. All of the above.
How do you trap them?
Seth asked.
A man has to keep his trade secrets private,
Maddox said, taking a bite of pork roast.
Let me tell you, apprehending a fairy is no easy task, slippery critters. The trick usually involves appealing to their vanity. Even then, takes quite a bit of know-how.
Could you use an apprentice?
Seth inquired.
Hold that thought about 6 years.
Maddox winked at Kendra.
Who buys fairies? Kendra asked.
Oh, folks who run preserves like your granddad. A few private collectors, other brokers.
Are there lots of preserves?
Seth asked.
Oh, dozens,
Maddox replied.
They're on all 7 continents.
Even Antarctica?
Kendra asked.
2 in Antarctica, although 1 is underground. Harsh environment. Perfect for certain species, though.
Kendra swallowed a bite of pork.
What keeps people from discovering the sanctuaries?
There has been a worldwide network of dedicated people keeping the preserves secret for thousands of years,
Grandpa said.
They are backed by ancient fortunes, held in trust. Bribes get paid, locations are changed when necessary.
Helps that most folks are unable to see the little critters,
Maddox said.
With the right licenses, you can get butterflies through customs. When you can't, there are other ways to cross borders.
The preserves are the final refuge for many ancient and wonderful species,
Grandpa said.
The goal is to prevent those wondrous beings from passing out of existence.
Amen,
Maddox said. You have a good haul this season? Dale asked.
Far as trapping goes, pickings are getting slimmer every year. I made a few exciting finds in the wild, one you won't believe. I picked up several rare specimens from preserves in Southeast Asia and Indonesia. I'm sure we can do some trading. I'll tell you more when we adjourn to the study.
You kids would be welcome to join us,
Grandpa said.
All right,
Seth cheered. Kendra took another bite of the succulent pork roast. Everything Lena cooked was outstanding, always perfectly seasoned, typically served with delicious gravies or sauces. Kendra never had any complaints about her mom's cooking, but Lena was in a class all her own. Grandpa and Maddox discussed people Kendra did not know, other individuals involved in the secret world of fairy aficionados. She wondered if Maddox would ask about Grandma, but it never came up. Maddox repeatedly mentioned the Evening Star. Grandpa seemed to focus on this news with particular interest, rumors that the Evening Star was forming again. A woman who claimed the Evening Star tried to recruit her, whispers of an attack by the Evening Star. Kendra could not resist interjecting.
What's the Evening Star? It sounds like you're using it as a code word.
Maddox glanced uncertainly at Grandpa. Grandpa gave him a nod.
The Society of the Evening Star is an arcane organization that we all hoped had gone extinct decades ago,
Maddox explained.
Over the centuries, their relevance has waxed and waned. Seems like just when you think you've seen the last of them, you start hearing rumors again.
They are dedicated to overthrowing preserves in order to use them for their own misguided purposes,
Grandpa said.
Members of the society consort with demons and practitioners of the black arts.
Are they going to attack us?
Seth asked.
Not likely,
Grandpa said.
The preserves are protected by powerful magic. But I lend an ear to the news all the same. Rarely hurts to be cautious.
Why the Evening Star? Kendra asked. It's such a pretty name.
The Evening Star ushers in the night,
Maddox said. They considered the statement in silence. Maddox wiped his lips with a napkin.
Sorry, not a very cheery topic around the dinner table.
After supper, Lena cleared the table and they all went to the study. On the way there, Maddox collected several cases and crates from the entry hall. Dale, Seth, and Kendra helped. The cases had perforations, evidently to allow the creatures inside to breathe, but Kendra was unable to see into them. All were locked. Grandpa settled in behind his large desk. Dale and Maddox claimed the oversized armchairs. Lena leaned against the windowsill, and Kendra and Seth found seats on the floor.
First off,
Maddox said, bending over and unlocking a large black crate.
We have some fairies from a preserve on Timor.
He opened the latch, and eight fairies soared out. Two tiny ones, not even an inch tall, darted to the window. They were amber in color, with wings like flies. One banged the windowpane with a minuscule fist. A large fairy, more than 4 inches tall, hovered in front of Kendra. She looked like a miniature Pacific Islander, with dragonfly wings across her back, as well as tiny wings on her ankles. Three of the fairies had elaborate butterfly wings with the appearance of stained glass. Another had oily black wings. The last had furry wings, and her body was coated with pale blue fuzz.
Whoa,
Seth said.
That one's all hairy.
A downy fountain sprite, found only on the island of Roti,
Maddox said.
I like the little ones, Kendra said.
a more common variety. They haunt the Malaysian Peninsula,
Maddox said. They're so fast, Kendra said. Why don't they escape?
Catching a fairy renders her powerless, Maddox said. Keep her in a cage or a sealed room like this one, and her magic cannot be used to escape. While under confinement, they become very docile and obedient.
Kendra frowned. How does Grandpa know they will stay in his garden if he buys them? Maddox winked at Grandpa.
Get right to the point, this one.
He turned back to Kendra.
Fairies are highly territorial, non-migratory creatures. Put them in a livable environment and they stay put, especially an environment like Fablehaven, with gardens and plentiful food and other enchanted critters. I'm sure I can find a trade for the fountain sprite,
Grandpa said.
The Banda Sea Sunwings are beautiful as well. We can work out the particulars later.
Maddox slapped the side of the crate and the fairies returned. The ones with the stained glass wings took their time, drifting lazily. The little ones zoomed in. The fountain sprite floated up to a high corner of the room. Maddox patted the side of the crate again and spat a stern command in a language Kendra did not understand. The fuzzy fairy glided into the container.
Next we have some albino night grifters from Borneo.
Out of a case flew three milky white fairies, their moth-like wings peppered with flecks of black. Maddox proceeded to display several other groups of distinctive fairies. Then he began showing fairies one at a time. Kendra found a couple of them disgusting. One had thorny wings and a tail. Another was reptilian, covered in scales. Maddox displayed its chameleonic ability to match different backgrounds.
Oh, ho, ho. Now for my big find, Maddox said, rubbing his hands together. I captured this little lady in an oasis deep in the Gobi Desert. I've only seen one other of a kind. Could we dim the lights?
Dale jumped up and shut the lights off.
What is she?
Grandpa asked. In answer, Maddox opened the final case. Out soared a dazzling fairy with wings like shimmering veils of gold. Three gleaming feathers streamed beneath her, elegant ribbons of light. She hung gloriously in the center of the room with a regal air.
A gin harp,
Grandpa said in astonishment.
Favor us with a song, I beg you,
Maddox said. He repeated the solicitation in another language. The fairy gleamed even brighter, shedding sparks. The music that followed was mesmerizing. The voice made Kendra imagine a multitude of vibrating crystals. The wordless song had the power of an operatic aria mingled with the sweetness of a lullaby. It was longing, beckoning, hopeful, and heartbreaking. They all sat transfixed until the song ended. When it was over, Kendra wanted to applaud, but the moment felt too sacred.
Ah, truly you are magnificent,
Maddox said, repeating the compliment again in a foreign tongue. Chinese? He tapped the side of her case, and with a radiant flourish, the fairy was gone. The room felt dim and bleak in her absence. Kendra tried to blink away the splotchy afterimages.
How did you make such a find?
Grandpa asked in wonder.
I caught wind of some local legends near the Mongolian border. Cost me nearly 2 months of brutal living to track her down.
The only other known gin harp has her own shrine in a Tibetan sanctuary,
Grandpa explained.
She was thought to be unique. Fairy connoisseurs travel from all corners of the globe to behold her.
I can see why, Kendra said.
What a singular treat, Maddox. Thank you for bringing her into our home.
I am touring her around the circuit before I take offers,
Maddox said.
I don't mean to pretend I can afford her, but send me word when she becomes available.
Standing up, Grandpa looked at the clock and clapped his hands together.
Looks like it's about time for everyone under the age of 30 to head off to bed.
But it's still early,
Seth said.
No grousing. I have negotiations to conduct with Maddox tonight. We can't have young people underfoot. You'll need to stay in your room no matter what commotion you hear downstairs. Our, negotiations can be a bit spirited. Understood?
Yes, Kendra said.
I want to negotiate,
Seth said. Grandpa shook his head.
It's a dull business. You kids have a good sleep.
No matter what you think you hear,
Maddox said as Kendra and Seth departed the study.
We aren't having fun.